I'm Gary Nall. Once again, we're here to share information on how to live a longer and healthier and happier life. We begin today with a study from the Pescara University, which is in Italy. And they came up with a research paper about Ayurvedic spice. In this case, it's called turmeric. That's the yellow herb that you get in curry dishes. And it's used in thousands of recipes throughout the subcontinent and India. But inside that turmeric is a very, very powerful healing agent, one of the most powerful in all of nature. It's called curcumin. Curcumin is anti-cancer, antiviral, antibacterial, immune modulating, really helps your immune system, is good for your heart, and a lot of other things. There are tens of thousands of papers published in the respected journals on this. Now, all the information I share with you on health and healing every day all comes from the National Library of Medicine, PubMed, and this is the government's repository of the finest scientific articles that they can find. This is where all of my material comes from. What did this study find? It found that this particular spice, turmeric, and its active ingredient, curcumin, is good for your prostate. Well, when you consider how many men in the United States suffer from enlarged prostate, inflamed prostate, precancerous prostate, or prostate cancer, it's a bunch. And the older you get, the more likely it is that you're going to have this problem. So what this does is the curcumin reduces the symptoms of non-cancerous enlarged prostate. It's also known as benign prostatic hyperplasia. And the ancient Ayurvedic herbal remedy joins the list of several other nutraceuticals that have now been scientifically confirmed to reduce enlarged prostate. And people in this study were on a 6-month protocol. These are people diagnosed with benign prostatic hyperplasia and only used the curcumin. There was no other drugs used. And they had substantial improvement in reducing the inflammation, and that helps the body get back to normal. So you turn off inflammation, you turn off cancer, and you help with diabetes and heart disease, because all of these have inflammatory processes, part of like Alzheimer's and dementia. And curcumin turns off inflammation. Really terrific. I would say that as good as cat's claw and cayenne combined. So, and also they're not the only ones. Another study from Seoul National University College of Medicine in South Korea found that curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, inhibited hypoxia-induced factor 1 alpha in both animal and human prostate cell test. This inhibition resulted in the reduction of inflammation, which is hyperplasia, among the prostate cells. This in turn mediated epithelial transition markers directly related to inflammation, meaning it turns down inflammation. If you have arthritis, you want to turn down inflammation or any other type of illness in the body. From Washington University School of Medicine comes a study about your gut bacteria. It could be the key to preventing Alzheimer's. Yeah, brand new information in the current issue. The key to preventing and treating Alzheimer's disease may lie in our gut bacteria in part, as well as in our brains. A new study suggests that the bacteria inhabiting the gut affects immune responses in the brains of mice, leading to changes in the rate of neurodegeneration. As evidence mounts that a healthy microbe, meaning a healthy gut bacteria, meaning clean foods, fermented foods, kimchi, your misos, and just plain probiotics, glass of beet juice, all of these help create healthy bacteria in your gut. That's important because sugar, yeasty foods, meat, antibiotics destroy the healthy bacteria and cause a proliferation of the toxic bacteria. That's not good for your immune system because the gut bacteria directly impact the health or lack of health of your immune response. So this is just one more way they believe in treating Alzheimer's in humans. So where you live, what you eat, your lifestyle, all have an effect upon gut microbiome, and populations of microbes in it change throughout a person's lifetime. People with Alzheimer's disease have much lower microbial diversity in their gut than those who are healthy. And several studies point to the microbiome driving the development of neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington, etc. Multiple sclerosis, ALS. In the new study at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, mice genetically modeled to develop Alzheimer were divided into two groups. One was raised in sterile conditions from birth till death, and they studied the gut microbe. And the others receive antibiotics to permanently change their gut flora. After 40 weeks, the brains of mice kept in sterile conditions showed much less neurodegeneration than those with typical mice microbiomes. The outcome in mice in the antibiotic group was less clear, but again, you have more damage to the brain when you don't have healthy bacteria, which means you gotta have a healthy diet. You need the probiotics. So just focus on that. Next up, unprecedented in its potential impacts, could a new anti-cancer study reignite the KABA, K-A-B-A, interest? This is from the University of Minnesota. A patent-pending blend of compounds from KABA for none of the potentially adverse liver effects may see the much maligned herb reemerge in the dietary supplement space, as according to the researchers there. It's an aqueous extract from the root of the Piper methysticin, and is traditionally served as a beverage in South Pacific Islanders. And it just showed that there's a low incidence of certain cancers in several South Pacific countries. And proposing that what's really the face of this is what are called cavalactones, C-A-V-A-L-A-C-T-O-N-E-S. These are organic extracts. They can also have a long history of traditional use for anxiety. In fact, for many years, during the 1970s and 80s, KABA, what was called KABA-KABA, was used as an anti-anxiety herbal. But then it was shown to have some liver toxicity associated with some of the commercially available KABA-containing dietary supplements. And that was over a 10-year period. So they simply took it out. Well, now they're showing that the extract, so it's a different way of taking the nutraceutical active ingredients out, can have a direct impact in another way, especially for lung cancer in humans. So a whole lot of good research there. And this was published in Cancer Prevention Research. And the DNA damage resulted from tobacco carcinogens was also significantly reduced with prevention. And this was one of the preventative modes. And there was no liver damage in these. That was the problem before, it was liver damage. So just bring you up to date on something. Now, a lot of people don't even know what a pulse is. I'm talking about not a pulse in your wrist. I'm talking about the bean, the legume family, P-U-L-S-E-S's. But according to the University of Copenhagen, pulses which have 2 to 3 times the protein of cereal grains could replace meat altogether while being sustainable and climate friendly. Now, for those of you who are not aware, the best place to find pulses, some health food stores, but into Indian stores. So if you're fortunate enough in your community to have the Indian stores with their hundreds of different pulses and legumes and spices, good place to shop. In New York City, there's a whole lot of Indian stores down in the 27th block on Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. And you can smell all the herbs as you walk down the street. In any case, pulses have a unique ability to capture nitrogen from the air and fix it to soil to create fertilizer, which benefits other parts as well and of the plant. This makes the need for additional fertilizer negligible, as well as the crop greenhouse gas emissions. You're not going to have them. In these studies, the scientist took a careful look at pulses consumption across Europe, and in doing so, identified the obstacles that challenge consumers. People in Denmark have roughly average knowledge of pulses. They come in last place for quantity and variety of pulses eaten. They just don't eat them. Spain is at the top of the class when it comes to awareness, the variation of pulses used in total consumption. They're very into it. And in fact, Spain has had a historic interreaction with the Middle Eastern culinary traditions, and that's probably one of the reasons. The earlier explorers and traders brought back these spices and began to use them in the dishes, which were a novelty in Spain. So now you find them everywhere in all the menus, but not in the United States, not in Great Britain, not in Germany. So regardless, pulses are a natural part of Spain's Mediterranean diet. In Germany, the traditions have been forgotten, so forget that. One little aside here. When I was last in Germany, I was visiting an anti-aging clinic. I wanted to see where the cell implants, because it's not an injection, you actually have this huge needle. I mean, it's big. And they numb the buttock, and then they stick in this large needle, and they push in these fetal extracts from sheep, and that's supposed to rejuvenate any of the organs in your body that are damaged or hurting. And the science is there to support it. But what was interesting is when I was speaking with the doctor who ran the clinic, and I was asked, could I speak with the patients? He said, sure. So they kind of all got together. They're about 50. And I said, how often have you been back? They said, about every 4 to 5 years. That's how long it lasts. And I said, and what have you noticed the difference? Oh, new energy. My skin looks different, my immune system's stronger, I have more strength, and whatever organ I was wanting to get rejuvenated is working better. Okay. What about your lifestyle? Oh, we haven't changed the lifestyle. Really? Because I notice how many people are smoking. So you continue smoking and drinking, eating a poor diet, not exercising, you just rely upon this. I said, well, what would happen if you change your diet, change your lifestyle, and then took this? They'd never tried it. It was just an interesting little observation. But some of the most unhealthy meals I've ever seen in my life were in Germany. I mean, Great Britain is the worst country in the world as far as their culinary cuisine. But Germany's got so much fat. In fact, when the doctor was taking me from his clinic, where all the work is done, back to where everyone stays, he said we always stop off and have a pre-dinner snack. Okay, so we go into this big, looked like a barn, and it was filled, and people sat at these circular tables, like family style, and in the middle of the table were different, like mustards and ketchups and sauces, but then they bring you over a bowl of sausages. Now, I'm a vegan, I didn't eat, but I was watching it. Now, these are not tiny little sausages. These are large sausages. And different types of sausages, and that they make right there. They have their own slaughterhouse in the back, and I didn't want to get into, you know, that whole issue with them. But I said, let me just get this straight. So they're giving you not a glass of beer, a whole pitcher of beer. I mean, it's had to be at least a quart of beer, and you sit there for an hour and talk and socialize and eat these dip, you know, and they. You dip your sausage into whatever season you went on it and eat it and drink it down with a beer. And then you go home and eat dinner. Good luck with that. I'd never seen that in any other country, but that's why the German population is not as healthy and has a high degree of heart disease and obesity. In any case, pulses are very important. And if you want to wean yourself off meat, then my suggestion is try a veggie burger made not from genetically engineered material, but rather made from pulses. There's a lot of them out there, a lot of varieties, a lot of tastes, but they're healthy. And they're giving you a high quality plant-based amino acids, which are the building blocks of your protein in the body. So pulses, legumes, lentils, And from lentils, you make a dal soup. So you can make yourself a lot of healthy meals and substitute grains in a meal for a week. See how you feel with that. And by the way, you get less carbon emissions with using pulses than you do with beans and beef. Let me give you an idea. If you were to have yourself lamb or beef, let's just take beef, you're getting a huge amount, 499 kilograms of carbon CO2 per protein, per kilogram of protein. Beans and pulses, 11. 500 versus 11. So growing these does not create air pollution, doesn't warm the planet. So it's one of the reasons we'd like to see more beans and pulses grown. All right? Next up, people with cluster headaches are more likely to have other illnesses, so says the Karolinska Institute at University Hospital in Sweden. Now, cluster headaches are very common in the United States. And what happens is that the cluster headaches are attacks of severe pain, often felt on one side of the head and often over the eye. The rare occasion affecting about 0.1% of the population, but they can be debilitating. People affected with cluster headaches can experience up to 8 per day, with each one lasting anywhere between 15 minutes to almost 2 to 3 hours. Cluster headaches are relatively short-lasting compared to migraines. Still, there's a lot of pain, and it's severe, and it's incapacitating. You know, your eyes water, you get redness around your head, you get nasal congestion. So that's also what comes with it. But what this study showed is that there could be other problems as well that are undiagnosed. For example, controlling the circadian rhythms, sleep cycles, wake cycles. They found that makes a difference. They also found that people having cluster headaches are more likely to have other illnesses, and those could be heart conditions that are not recognized. Heart disease, mental disorders, neurological disease. In fact, in the study, 92% of the people in the study with cluster headaches also had at least one other illness. So the whole idea is to detoxify the entire body and start using, believe it or not, the best therapy is acupuncture with a series of different herbs that are known to help. Cat's claw is one. Feverfew is also important. And finally, from Northwestern University comes a study about vitamin D, and is found to improve symptoms of toxic arrhythmia during chemotherapy. So high doses of vitamin D alleviated symptoms of patients with toxic arrhythmia of chemotherapy significantly faster than current treatments. That was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Journal Dermatology. So just one more reason why vitamin D3 is so important in so many ways. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And by the way, every Monday, 6 a.m., John LaBelle, who publishes the Gary Null newsletter, sends you out all of the footnotes and most important information. Now, that's free. You have to go to GaryNull.com, and you'll see how to sign up for that. But if you want the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday one, which has a lot more information in it, a lot more topics, there's a small fee for that. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Whoa, do I remember the 80s, the disco, at least up till 1985. Then AIDS caused the discos to close. And then the little nightclubs opened up. Just a passage in life. For those of you who've been listening, you know that we have been deconstructing many of the myths that we were told concerning COVID, and we will continue to do so. However, most people are simply yet believing in the official statements. In part, it's understandable. They believe in the news media, they believe in their favorite broadcasters on different television and radio programs. But it's important that we know now that virtually the entire house of cards has collapsed. There's so many reports coming out that it's overwhelming. Now come the lawsuits. But we still have a lot of diehard people who are emphatic that they're going to take the boosters and they're going to take the flu shot at the same time. Whatever Fauci says, even though he's retired, they're doing. They're not open to discussion or debate. They're not open to any facts. In fact, every day, all of the information involving anything that is of controversy, I send to the management of this station. I also send to people on the local, or have been on the local station board or the national board, to show them that what I'm sharing with them is not opinion. It is a lot of independent scientific fact. Now let's go to something you have not seen or heard. This is just a small sampling of thousands of physicians in just Great Britain alone, who, and these are all orthodox pro-vaccine people, who took a look at the science in all different professions. Every one of these people is a medical doctor from all different types of medicine. You'll have a cardiologist who believed in the vaccine until they began to actually see the heart irregularities in numbers they had never seen before in their career. So good for them for having the courage to speak out and tell the truth. And again, this is not going to play anywhere in the United States. You will not see this anywhere else in the media. And because they close down the debate, because they control the forums, and we're going to show you how much of those forums they control, you now know absolutely unequivocally that virtually everything on COVID, on the Hunter Biden's laptop, on Russian control of Trump, all that, all lies on their part, protecting the status quo. Why would you believe anything that any official says in Washington after you see this? All right? And just remember, this is when we told you so. What do I mean? We told you the lockdowns and coercive preventative measures would not work. They did nothing to lessen infectious rates other than turn adverse effects from lockdowns and rise in mental health disorders, especially among children, teenagers. They brought about enormous economic hardships, causing the greatest loss of employment and closing of businesses in American history, even greater than the Great Depression. They caused a rise in unemployment and individual bankruptcies. They contributed to inflation, but nobody will admit that. We were right. The entire establishment was wrong. On testing, I was the first radio program in the United States to completely deconstruct methodically, without opinion but facts, that PCR test was a fraud. And how did I know it was fraud? Because the person who invented it and won the Nobel Prize, a professional friend of mine, Kerry Mullis, and to prove that, I put an hour and 54-minute video that I had filmed of him in his home going over all this with Anthony Fauci, who would not debate him. And he said, don't use this for making diagnosis. And that's exactly what we did. And it won't work above being accurate above amplifications above about 23. We were doing it 44. So every single one of these tests was fraudulent. We told you that repeatedly. The PCR test from the start was the wrong diagnostic to use. It was inaccurate, doesn't detect an active viral infection. There's poor differentiation of viral content. There's a high rate of false positives. And the PCR testing created numbers to declare the pandemic. Oh, we have 100 million Americans who tested positive who have COVID. No, you had an incorrect, inaccurate test. You knew it was inaccurate. You engaged in intentional fraud. Therefore, you are engaged in crimes against humanity. And you lied. So if you had a false test where 90% of the people or 95% of the people did not have COVID who got it, and you said they did, that justified that it was a pandemic. In the treatment, the earliest efforts to quarantine, and with no early stage treatment, was a disaster. It increased COVID deaths dramatically. But remember, we were the first to have Dr. Paul Merrick, Dr. Pierre Corey, and about 30 other Orthodox doctors on to show they were treating successfully the patients at the very beginning. And they had high cure rates. The establishment, no cure rates. In March of 2020, our paper, Richard Gale and I wrote a paper of how to protect yourself naturally from respiratory viruses. Then later, a second paper in April 2020, a paper on natural protection from coronavirus based upon only peer-reviewed literature from the National Library of Medicine, dealing first with SARS and MERS and the coronaviruses, much of what we listed is now found in recent protocols. In fact, today, the most popular protocols in America by physicians are ones that we stated 3 years ago, nearly 3 years ago. They were wrong. We were right. They caused hundreds of thousands of Americans to die. We saved countless lives. For the vaccines, originally a pandemic of the elderly with comorbidities, now a pandemic of vaccine injury in every age group. Back in early May 2020, we warned of the potential problems with coronavirus vaccines, including clots, heart conditions, the eosinophilia, reproductive complications, and other organ problems, kidney failure, based upon earlier pre-COVID attempts to create a SARS coronavirus vaccine. Every single one failed during the animal trials, and it was shelved. We told you the likely outcome. We were right. The entire medical industrial complex was wrong. Either these people are complete idiots and just by memorizing became a doctor, but they sure as hell don't have any common sense or courage to look for the truth. Shame on the group of cowards, most doctors, most scientists, and all bureaucrats and technocrats. They caused people to die, but people trusted them. Will you trust them tomorrow? Probably. That's on you, not them. They've shown who they are. And it never stops. They're still doubling down. But remember, protection from the virus, they said, and protection from transmission, they said, they lied on both. They never tested for that. Claims that the RNA vaccines are completely safe because it is only an RNA. False, or RNA only remains in the muscle at the site of injection in the deltoid muscle. False. The RNA is being distributed throughout the body. That's what we found out. Didn't stay in the muscle. There were no long-term immunity with the vaccine. There was long-term immunity with natural infection, far more robust. A report by Dr. Van der Bosch in his views that mass vaccination during a pandemic would create new virus variants. Repeated boosters would increase probability of new mutations. He was right, and he was right. The media was wrong. The RNA vaccine's potential to interfere and be incorporated in the body's genome may not obscure the real adverse repercussions until a year, 2 years, or more following vaccination. Even Anthony Fauci warned us about that. Rodney, please get the 25-second Anthony Fauci. In his own words, here's what he said. Not a single person in the entire media in America played this clip. Listen carefully what Anthony Fauci had to say back then, and now look at what he did with COVID. He was right the first time. He was deadly wrong the second time. This is Anthony Fauci.
Many scientists are beginning to believe that a vaccine against AIDS may be impossible to make and too dangerous to test.
If you take it and then a year goes by and everybody's fine, then you say, okay, that's good. Now let's give it to 500 people, and then a year goes by and everything's fine. You say, well, then now let's give it to thousands of people, and then you find out that it takes 12 years for all hell to break loose, and then what have you done?
You heard what he said. It normally takes somewhere between 7 to 10 years to find how safe and effective a vaccine is because of delayed reactions. Sometimes 3 to 5 years, you don't get a reaction. But they created a protocol that if you had a reaction within the first 14 days after getting vaccinated, it could not have been due to the vaccine. That was completely fraudulent. We've seen people get a vaccine and drop dead. One right on television, we played the clip. The nurse who was there, all the cameras set up, it was a press conference to promote the vaccine. She had just gotten it, got up there about 20 seconds into what she was saying. She started to lose her balance. Then she just dropped down and she died. You can have adverse effects within seconds after getting a vaccine, but for them to say first 2 weeks, then all those people who died or had adverse effects in 2 weeks were eliminated. Everything you could do to game a system, they did. And they got away with it because the media chose not to look for the truth. So then we said that we were the first radio program in the United States to show you that based upon research out of Europe, I think it was France and Sweden, the scientists said that the RNA vaccine could become a part of your DNA and change the DNA. People said, not possible. Not only did it prove to be possible, but it's there now. And you have no control over that. There was absolutely no reason to vaccinate younger adults, children, and infants. And now they're the main victims of adverse reactions, myocarditis, heart attacks. There was widespread corruption. You've heard on this program for the first time that the Defense Department was behind all of this. They controlled everything from day one. Why is it not a single media, not a single person in Washington came forward from either party to tell us who was really behind this and how corrupt they are at everything they do? And they kept changing the definition of pandemic and vaccines, including gene therapy, to satisfy health officials' measures. The government health advisory panels and the FDA and CDC heavily stacked with pharmaceutical shills to assure poor regulatory review of vaccines and novel drug clinical trials results for rapid approval. They absolutely suppressed all safer, cheaper, repurposed drugs, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, others, in favor of more expensive, new, novel drugs like remdesivir. They shouldn't even use remdesivir. It was a part of lethal injection in those being executed in the state penitentiaries. It's just a disaster drug, and yet guess which drug you got? Probably the only drug you got when you went to the hospital, remdesivir. There's a high threshold rate for PCR tests to assure false positives had to be intentional. No way these officials were that stupid. Well, maybe they are. And there's a widespread campaign to silence and threaten critics in the professional medical community. No controversy was allowed. No debate was allowed. No second opinion was allowed. Clearly, that was intentional. Now let's go to Great Britain and hear what their doctors are saying in mass, because of what they're now seeing is a reality of trusting their own utterly, completely corrupt government.
I'm Dr. Roz Jones. I'm a pediatrician, and I've been speaking out against COVID-19 vaccines for children for the last 18 months. But we've got way beyond that now. There's an increased all-cause mortality. There are increased side effects from the booster shots. And apart from anything else, they are not effective against any of the current variants. It's simply time to stop the shots.
Hi, my name is Dr. Jana van der Poel and I'm an NHS GP. In my entire career, I've never had any problems giving or receiving vaccines before, but in 2020, I decided not to have a COVID vaccine because I was concerned about the experimental nature of the mRNA platforms used. And in the past couple of years, I've observed a number of my patients present with severe and debilitating long COVID symptoms, not after having COVID, but after receiving their first or second COVID vaccine, or sometimes their boosters. And I've since come to understand that the spike protein itself can be extremely toxic to the human body. And I believe we need to stop deliberately exposing patients to the most toxic part of the COVID virus by giving these vaccines. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Dr. Rohan Seth. I'm a former GP. I relinquished my license to practice medicine in 2021 because I did not agree with many of the COVID policies, the lockdowns, the masking, and primarily because of the vaccine rollout. I think these vaccines are unsafe, they're not effective, the rollout is unethical and unnecessary. It's unnecessary to vaccinate children for COVID. It's unethical to vaccinate pregnant women without any long-term studies. The harms being caused by these vaccines are quite apparent now. The excess deaths around the globe are correlating with this vaccine rollout. The media are silent about this. The data is alarming, and the vaccines need to be stopped.
I'm Angus Dalgleish. I'm a professor of oncology at St George's, a consultant medical oncologist, and I have started to notice that several of my patients with melanoma who've been stable with stage 4 disease, they've had very good immunotherapy or other treatments, and I've been reviewing them from 5 to 20 years. I've noticed that I have now over 6, possibly 7, even an 8th yesterday, who've clearly relapsed following the booster vaccine. At first, we didn't put the two together, but when patients said, I felt awful since the vaccine, I've just been drained, they described symptoms of like a long COVID, and the next thing we know, 2-3 weeks, a couple of months later, they've got clear evidence of relapse. And these relapses are quite aggressive. They're not a gentle relapse. They're relapses that are requiring systemic therapy, as opposed to a little nodule that requires surgical excision. But it's not just this. I'm now very much aware in my own circle of many people who are having, they haven't got melanoma, but they've never had anything before, but they've got lumps and bumps and they're not feeling well. And two people I've interviewed at great length, they all put it down to feeling awful after their booster. They were fine with the first two vaccines or just had shivers, flu, etc. But they've described being very tired, very fatigued, wanted to stay in bed, and this has dragged on to the point where they've gone to the doctor and they've had blood counts and investigations, and I now know 7 of them. 2 of them have leukemias and the others have lymphomas, and one of them has a very bad myeloma, which he was absolutely sure was instigated by the booster as he developed the dreadful symptoms. So I want to bring everybody's attention that I think that this does not look like a coincidence to me, and we need to join forces and see if this is a real effect, and if it is, we must stop all the boosters immediately. Thank you.
My name is Fiona. I'm a GP, and I'm really concerned about the deterioration I've seen in the health of many of my patients since the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccinations, and in particularly as people have accumulated more doses. The problems include several heart attacks in fit and healthy 40 and 50-year-olds, new asthmatic symptoms in adults with no previous diagnosis, people getting chronic fatigue-type symptoms, shoulder pains and inflammation that are continuing months after their jab. I'm also concerned about the national and international safety data that suggests something may be terribly wrong with these vaccines and possibly may be causing changes to the immune and the vascular systems that could be long-standing. We're beginning to hear from oncologists and haematologists about unexpected and aggressive cancers, and surgeons and pathologists are talking about multiple blood clotting issues. I believe it's time we stop the vaccination programme and give weight and consideration to the data. It's unethical for us to vaccinate people, or indeed treat people with any medical intervention, without being sure that the benefits outweigh the risks. At present, I'm concerned that the risks of continuing this programme greatly outweigh the benefits for the vast majority of patients. Thank you.
My name is Dr. David Cartland. As a GP and a father, I'm astounded and angry that this vaccine has been rolled out to younger and younger cohorts and has recently been authorised for use in the 6-month-old baby to 5-year-old child category. The adverse events data is unprecedented and stacking up week by week in systems that are likely underreported, such as the VAR system and yellow card system. Medicine is all about safety. And given the huge safety signals that the mRNA injections are giving off, we need to stop these shots immediately, pending urgent investigation, for the sake of our next generation and children.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Dean Patterson. I am a consultant, general physician, and cardiologist. Since the COVID-19 vaccines have been launched, I've noticed an increasing signal of both myocarditis and myocardial injury. In conjunction with this, I have noticed an increasing signal of thrombosis and other serious adverse events. Prior to the vaccine rollout, I didn't witness any evidence of myocarditis in relation to the COVID infection itself. Over the last 2 years, we've witnessed an increase in the loss of the efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccines. The COVID-19 vaccines clearly lack durability, and hence the recommendation has constantly been amended to go from first two vaccinations followed by a booster to regular campaigning for ongoing booster vaccination. If there was a very clear absence of serious harms, then this strategy might be acceptable. However, in light of my serious concerns, I believe we should halt the rollout of the vaccination program and perform a thorough investigation into the serious adverse events. After all, the preliminary studies that have been done in these vaccines are yet to be completed in 2023, and almost the entire placebo group in these studies has now been vaccinated, making extrapolation of the harms extremely difficult. At present, we're seeing a wave of non-COVID excess mortality, which brings me to my conclusion that there is serious harm in association with the vaccine rollout. And until proven otherwise, these vaccines are not safe.
My name is Dr. Anna Forbes, and I place tremendous importance on listening to what my patients have to say to me. And many of my patients have been telling me that they've been feeling increasingly unwell to varying degrees since their COVID-19 vaccinations, and that they have not been listened to by their usual doctors, and this has not been investigated any further. And I believe that this whole situation demands immediate and deep investigation.
Hello, I'm Tony Hinton, a London surgeon. I know many people who've had the COVID vaccine and then caught COVID. I also know a lot of people that have had side effects following a COVID vaccine. So what do we think? Safe and effective, or just stop the shots?
My name is Dr. Julia Wilkins, and I'm a consultant in obstetrics and gynaecology. In the UK, the MHRA is tasked with the monitoring of adverse events related to the use of medicines or devices in healthcare. As a regulator, they are supposed to take action when significant safety signals are recognised. The MHRA has regularly published summaries of yellow card reports submitted by people who have experienced adverse events after a COVID-19 vaccine. The summary published on the 1st of December 2022 indicates almost 500,000 reports, which is about 1 in 114 people who have received a vaccine. This includes 2,362 deaths. It also includes over 30,000 acute cardiac events and almost 300,000 nervous system disorders, as well as many more serious and potentially life-threatening conditions. Whilst these reports obviously cannot be taken as proof of causality, these numbers are huge and as such unprecedented, and also reflected in the adverse events reporting systems in the US, in Europe, and by the WHO. Meanwhile, it has become clear that COVID-19 vaccines do not prevent infection or transmission. They are meant to reduce hospitalization and death, but even compared to the first year of the pandemic, a significant increase in excess mortality has been observed in the last 2 years. This increase across all age groups has occurred, at least in Scotland, in temporal association with the COVID-19 vaccine rollout. There has also been a significant increase in cardiac morbidity, and now several studies indicating COVID-19 vaccines to increase the risks of myocarditis. Unprecedented numbers of sudden death in all age groups, including children, have been reported. Also including many athletes suddenly collapsing in training or on the playing field. Post-marketing surveillance is essential when a new pharmaceutical product is given to the majority of populations without robust and long-term safety data, as even the regulatory trials were ended prematurely. If this was taken as seriously as we have always assumed it would be, these numerous and alarming safety signals should have led to a thorough investigation whilst halting any further administrations. It is inconceivable that to date this has not been pursued. And so, in the interest of the safety of our population, we must call for an immediate and comprehensive evaluation of all the available data. And whilst this investigation is ongoing, we must stop the shots.
Okay, we're going to stop it there. If I continue to play clips like this from all doctors, orthodox, mainstream, pro-vaccine doctors, I could play this for the next 36 hours. Why don't we hear from a single one of these anywhere else in the media? So let's take a look at this. We already have balkanized our society for the needs of those who can control the outcome. We have identity politics, we have the cancel culture, we have critical race theory, the most racist concept since Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, and smart, supposedly, allegedly smart people would see through this, but they don't. They endorse it or are fearful of the consequence of challenging it. We will challenge it every single day if need be. In fact, tomorrow I have two Oxford University debaters on this topic of the woke. And yet, here we have, you heard them, the propensity of the people you just heard were women who are professional. They have advanced degrees, board certified in the medical field, specialties. They treat patients. There's no controversy in their life until now. So for those of you who have no background in medicine, have never seen a patient and saw an adverse reaction to a vaccine, how do you justify saying that that person should not be heard, instead canceled, when they have put their life, their livelihood, their reputation on the line, and you heard two of them have quit medicine rather than be vaccinated because they did their homework, a woman and a man, both. Now that says something in Great Britain to give up your license to practice medicine if you don't have experience in any other career, and they don't. But their life was more important than a vaccine. They have been shown to be correct. All the proponents have been shown to be wrong. The question is, what is the magic number of showing someone is either misinformed, properly informed, but malignant in the use of that material? They've weaponized it. So they get along to keep getting the paychecks, keep being in those circles, being invited back onto television to give your so-called expert opinion. You have to self-censor, and you have to give a completely biased answer. These people chose not to do any of the above. So would you say that empowering women, isn't that what we hear all the time? And I agree with that. But suddenly you denigrate those women. You're denigrating people who have the courage to first do no harm. Look at the average American physician who does a lot of harm, except for emergency medicine. That is exemplary positive, but all chronic care is just a fraud and the number one cause of death and injury each year in the United States. And I've proven that. We did the scholarship and 5 years using their figure showing death by medicine was the number one cause, iatrogenesis. But you still continue to believe in people who don't have the courage to come forward and say, I've done my homework. I've looked at the independent literature. I've stayed objective, and here's the conclusions, and here's my position. You have a handful, maybe 500 in the whole country, doing that. Another 14,000 are now members to one of their organizations, but no one in the mainstream media will ever have any of these people under debate because they would lose, the mainstream would lose the debate. So where is it in you that you continue to believe in something? What is your justification to believe in people who are killing millions of people, committing medical genocide? Because when 8 million people worldwide die, 900,000 in America have died, at least that we know of, from these vaccines and COVID and the vaccines, where is it that that we're giving special recognition to those who are responsible for the problem and destroying the reputations of those who found the truth? That's the debate today. And by the way, Deborah from Ontario, Canada, who I gave a shout out to your dad 2 years ago on his 80th birthday, he's healthy, he's dynamic. We are reviewing the Freedom of Information Act documents, 200 you sent, and we will put them up on the air as soon as we see that they're giving us the information that they're supposed to. Now we're going to go to a report. And this is an interesting because one of the best interviewers out there is Kim Iverson. And Kim is going to interview the woman who you've heard before, but in a different way, talk about that everything we've been told by the FDA, the CDC, has been lies. Those agencies should be completely shut down, 100% shut down, and create something that is honest and ethical in its place. Here's what that interview had to say. Please listen carefully. We only have 2 minutes to go to WBAI, so we're just going to continue playing because I want you to get this in before the top of the hour. But we're saying goodbye to our BAI audience. Those in BAI can continue listening on PRN.live, PRN.live, because this is one of those interviews that can change the entire perception of COVID and everyone who's on the wrong side of this issue.
Right. So the documents were obtained through FOIA by a nonprofit, and they're posted online. I've referred to the links in my Substack. Also, I obtained some additional documents through Securities and Exchange Commission shareholder disclosures for BioNTech and Pfizer and other companies. And so the review of all of that led me to, and I also had some disclosed PowerPoint presentations from Operation Warp Speed, BARDA. And they were available from public meetings, and so and people just send me the collections of their documents. So all of that together points to, first of all, our U.S. government, when they announced when WHO announced the so-called global pandemic based on 40 cases worldwide out of 8 billion people, which is ridiculous. It's not any data. But they decided it's a global pandemic, then our government treated it as if it was an act of war by their actions, not by their words. What they told to the public, they said it was a health event. What they indeed created, they put National Security Council in charge of COVID policy response, and National Security Council doesn't have any health representatives on it, only defense and intelligence. And then the acts that were invoked to fund what they call countermeasures, it's primarily Defense Production Act of 1950 and a variety of different appropriations, but they all went through billions and billions of dollars, went through the Department of Defense, BARDA, then to their manager, which is Advanced Technologies International. It's a manager for the DOD who specializes in contracts, which are other transaction authorities. So these contracts that were released, and there are about 400 of them, they're all OTA, other transaction authority. Yeah, exactly. So it even states it here. Other transaction authority, and the scope of work is typically described as, like here, I'm highlighting it, large-scale vaccine manufacturing demonstration, or they sometimes say prototype, it's basically countermeasure, prototype, large-scale manufacturing demonstration. And that's how they contracted for these things, with billions and billions of dollars. So this is Pfizer you're showing here, and their contract was initially $2 billion, it states here, but then it was actually in different options, $10 billion. So gigantic amounts of money is going to buy us a demonstration. And demonstration, by definition, is fake. Okay, so that's how they contracted.
Okay, so this brings, so that was a lot of information. So the first thing that I heard was that they treated this like warfare. So they were not treating this as, oh, this was just, you know, a health event that happens. Like we see other sorts of health events or, you know, maybe not pandemics, but other sort of, you know, epidemics like influenza disease that maybe is a little bit more virulent than normal. And they don't treat it like this, is what you're saying. This was treated differently than like bird flu.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it was the structure, the organizational structure of it made no sense if you think of it as a health event, but makes a lot of sense if you think of it as war. So National Security Council, which is advisory to the President of the United States on foreign policy, consists of primarily defense heads and intelligence heads, no health representatives. And then the Operation Warp Speed was headed by the Department of Defense. So also in the internal PowerPoints that were declassified and released, it's clearly stated the org chart is drawn, and at the top of the org chart, Chief Operating Officer is the Department of Defense. So it's not just they're distributing the vaccine. They actually in charge of all of it, design of the clinical trials, supplies, manufacturing, production. They have established manufacturing base that's manufacturing this. And it's not just Pfizer. It's hundreds of companies. And then they have, you know, the clinical trial design, the safety monitoring, the reporting, data security, legislative affairs, legal, the Office of General Counsel, which is Department of Justice. This is basically, you know, people make a mistake thinking that this is Pfizer as a pharmaceutical corporation operating as a private commercial business. That's not true. What is happening here is the pharmaceutical corporations, plural, including Pfizer, have been folded into the government security complex through invoking of Defense Production Act. So the government fused with these companies, extended their liability coverage and sovereign immunity,
right,
and told them to follow the orders. You will get a ton of money. Don't ask any questions. Just do it.
Okay, so first of all, you know, so many of us were silenced and censored for even exploring the idea that this virus came from a lab. Right. That was considered absolute conspiracy theory. But in reality, what you're saying is that when you comb through these documents, the government, our own government, was treating it that way. They were treating it like this came from a lab. This is an act of warfare. And now we have to hunker down and do countermeasures to this warfare that has been taken upon us. So right then and there, the idea that, you know, that the lab leak was a conspiracy theory just shows that the fact that they censored and silenced so many people who even explored that option, and yet behind the scenes they were doing this, I mean, that's really outrageous. Secondly, then the question is, well, then what did they know? What did they know that we didn't know? Because they did behave so oddly, and that is something that I think many of us that believed this looks like this came from a lab and they know something we don't, that this is not natural out in just kind of naturally occurred, because suddenly, you know, we watched country after country after country shut down. Like as if those leaders were told something, like you better lock everybody down because we don't know what this thing is and we don't know what this thing's going to do. So, you know, right there was just so much that was suspicious, so much that was just odd. And now we've got this evidence essentially from these documents that they also were operating in that same way. So that is, I think, big news. I mean, many of us really suspected this, but it's really pretty much laid out there now in these documents. The second thing is you're saying is that, so they brought in all these pharmaceutical companies and they said, listen, you're now working for us. We're now in charge as the Department of Defense. You're going to do what we ask you to do, but you're going to make a bunch of money from it. And you're going to get complete immunity. That is something many of us had a big problem with, right? They don't have there's no repercussions for people that had vaccine injuries or died from these vaccines. So you're saying that they did that. And they, because they knew, I mean, why would they have done that? I, or because you make some claim that these were just fake, that this was a faked, the whole thing was faked. So what is that about? Explain that a little bit more.
Well, so what was faked, in my opinion, and actually, you know, based on these contracts and how they're written, is the representation to the public that, first of all, these are vaccines, and they're not vaccines, they're countermeasures. And you can see clearly in the contracts, it states that, the FDA is regulating them. That's not true. That's the biggest lie. FDA has no regulatory authorities over countermeasures. And in fact, they all cited that piece of law, including the FDA, so they all knew what they were doing. The piece of law that says that use of emergency use authorized countermeasures under public health emergency does not constitute clinical investigation. And so the regulations need not apply. And so that's the piece that they all citing, including FDA. So they're in full knowledge what they're doing, and the FDA is impersonating regulators to the public,
right,
to convince everyone and fool everyone into believing that these are actually really pharmaceuticals, that they're really manufactured to good manufacturing practices, that really there were rigorous clinical trials instead of the huge amount of fraud and manipulation of data that they did on behalf of these manufacturers. So that's the biggest lie.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so this all makes a lot more sense now that we see this, because the FDA, there was this, why would they approve these medications or these whatever they are, right? You know, you want to call, I don't call them vaccines. I don't think they're really vaccines by the definition of what I always thought a vaccine was growing up. So these shots, I mean, it did feel like just kind of sham hearings. Like it didn't matter what anybody said. I mean, we had two of the highest people of the FDA that were in the vaccine, that were vaccine regulators, resign because they were like, this is just foolery, essentially.
Okay, and there's more to come on that. I'm just showing you that behind the scenes, behind everything we were told, that was all facade. The FDA didn't have the power, nor the CDC had the power, nor the U.S. Public Health Service to have the power of any of what they claimed that they were doing. It was all in the hands of the Department of Defense, and they identified everyone. They made them free of being sued. And then they're the ones who did not allow the proper trials to occur. Will anybody be held accountable? It depends upon whether or not you have anyone in Congress with the courage to challenge the powerful elite and the deep state. In any case, tomorrow we're going to take a look at artificial intelligence. Some new stuff is happening and it's not good. And also, Greta Thunberg was stopped as she was leaving Davos and ask some really legitimate questions, including, what do you think of over 1,000 jets arriving here, private jets, and then they're going to talk about global warming and how they're going to shame people who are maybe using too much energy? Do you feel there's a contradiction? She wouldn't answer it. She wouldn't answer anything. It was embarrassing. Anyhow, we're going to have a lot on tomorrow's show, and tomorrow night, Dr. Bandana Shiva, that you won't want to miss. Have a nice day, everyone.